Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to your DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben and Mace here with you on a Thursday evening.
Mm-hmm.
We're currently watching the thrilling football game, the most thrilling of the day, you could say. Not that the college competition is much competition.
Not really
all.
Good options tonight. You've got this or not too far down the road from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. You've got East Carolina battling UCF, which...
tough decision, yeah. If you live in Florida.
Obviously, it wasn't a tough decision for people in Orlando to stay away because I saw a picture from UCF on the Empty Seats Picks Twitter feed. There's no one at that game.
When you don't have a win, you're going to struggle to fill the stands, I suppose.
I think the other thing, frankly, is that there's a lot of UCF fans who have understandable interest in arguably the school's most celebrated football alumnus, Blake Bortles, who is out there in black and gold for the Jaguars. And why do
mostly
we mention
gold.
So he almost looks a little bit familiar, although UCF has a different shade of gold than the Jaguars, where UCF's is a lighter gold. This is what the Jaguars are wearing is what I think you'd call something close to old gold.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a reverse of a typical Missouri uniform with the black and gold, except Mizzou has no teal. Go Tigers.
The Jacksonville gold does not look so gold once the players start sweating and getting on the wet field after the rain they've had. So
yeah, some of these
kind of brown at this point.
It's kind of brown. You know, Nike's got the uniforms that have the segments to them, and sometimes the sweat kind of shows up a little bit funny. Some gold, like the Jaguars are wearing tonight, has this problem. Pewter that the Bucks wear also has the problem that when you sweat, especially when you sweat the pants, when you wear the pants and you get the sweat stains on them, it looks a little bit awkward. You know, just uniform madness. The NFL has this color rush program, of course, for Thursday games.
We talked about it last week. We didn't even notice the color blindness thing.
I know. I didn't. Well, I didn't really think about it because I'm not colorblind, and you're not colorblind, but apparently the most common form of colorblindness is red-green, and Deadspin had the gif of what it looked like if you were colorblind, red-green colorblind. And just if you haven't taken a look at this, it looks like it's two green teams wearing forest green uniforms going against each other, and forest green is very close to the black and white of the officials, so it's even tough to tell the officials from the teams in the game. It was a mess. It was something that people didn't think about. And if you weren't colorblind, then it was like watching a Christmas movie. A bunch of elves in Santa's workshop running around. This game tonight, Titans Jaguars. I think the comparison to Kirk and Spock from classic Star Trek of the 1960s and to the recent Star Trek movies and their uniforms, I think that's probably the most apt comparison. So who have you got, Kirk or Spock tonight?
I was so tempted to take I can't remember who I picked, to be honest.
Well, the logical...
I think I took Jacksonville.
Ironically, the logical choice would be Kirk, and that's the Jaguars being at home and having some momentum. Jaguars are playing reasonably well and are an interesting stretch of the season. They're still low in my power rankings, of course, and they've earned that right, but the next three games are against teams that are combined 6-21, two against the Titans, including tonight, and one, or Thursday night, because I mean, you may be listening to this and the game might be over, and then one against the Chargers, who are struggling. The Jaguars have a chance to maybe put together three wins and be sitting at 6-6.
They could be in this.
They could be in the driver's seat in the AFC South if they get a little momentum going. You know, no, in any other division, they're out of it by this point. But in the AFC South, they're right in the thick of the picture. You know, if they were in the AFC West, they'd be four games back of the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
And the Broncos, of course, despite losing Sunday to Kansas City, have a three-game lead and have had a very interesting week. And we'll have a very interesting Sunday with Brock Osweiler making his first career start.
What a segue. What a segue.
Thank you.
An applaud.
We had to get back to the Broncos at some point on the, you know, Broncos podcast.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, the decision came effectively Monday. The Broncos did pull Peyton Manning after throwing four interceptions. He had been battling injuries throughout the entire week. I think it started, you know, let's see, there's a rib cage, there's a shoulder, and an ankle, I think.
Foot.
You're right, foot.
Partial tear of the plantar fascia.
Yeah.
The specific injury. And
lots of things he's been trying to work through. And
all of them causing problems. And you could see, just watching him throw the ball against Kansas City, there's a lot of discomfort there. And I think, frankly, when you get to this age, 39 years old, one injury begat another, begat another, because you're overcompensating to try and make up for it, and you don't heal as quickly. You know, he had an MRI on his rib cage, came up negative, but that negative for, you know, tearing some cartilage or fracturing something doesn't mean there isn't strain there. And of course, the foot injury has affected him. 5 of 20 against the Chiefs, 4 interceptions. 0.0 rating, you know.
By far, probably the worst game he's ever played in
his
life.
Yes, I would say so. There's nothing positive from that. But he's hurting. I mean, he's injured. I mean, if these injuries have been accumulating, it would explain a lot about what's happened to Peyton Manning this year. The thing is, quarterbacks, when they get old, in part because of the injuries, have seasons like this. Brett Favre had a season like this at the end of his career. You think back on guys like Joe Namath, Johnny Unitas, great quarterbacks, phenomenal quarterbacks, and they struggled at the end. You know, we'll see. We don't know what's next for Peyton Manning. He's week to week. Broncos hope to have him back at some point later on, and if he's healed, maybe he's got one more burst of success left in him. We'll see. But for now, for this Sunday at least, it's the Brock Osweiler Show, and after 3.5 years of seeing him develop, it's time to find out what the Broncos have in him, especially with his contract expiring after this year.
It'll be good to see him get an entire game to work with, as opposed to, well, I mean, other situations where you're either blown out a team
or getting blown out like Sunday.
And Sunday's game, when he came in, it wasn't exactly a completely lost game. They're down 3 scores, and we've seen the Broncos score 3 touchdowns in a short amount of time. But it'd be nice to see him be able to work with an entire playbook as opposed to mostly, you know, focusing on the pass. See what he can work with when the defense is kind of forced to be kept honest.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, it's a huge game for him. This is his contract year.
Yeah. We're not going to know if he's going to be a long-term success or failure based on one game. So if he goes out and plays well,
right,
don't go out and buy his jersey just yet. And if he goes out there and struggles, don't write him off. You know, let's not overreact to one game. And I know that's hard because we are in a league of overreactions. We're in a culture of overreactions. But please, don't, either way, good or bad, this is a beginning. Nothing more than that. I think it's going to be crucial to temper any reactions to what happened Sunday for Brock Osweiler. If he does well, oh, that's great. And if he does well and the Broncos win, fantastic. It's an eighth win. It's crucial in trying to make sure you stay in the race for a first-round bye and stay ahead in the AFC West. But at the same time, you've got the Patriots after that, so the narrative could change. And then conversely, if the Bears throw some different things at him, Vic Fangio, their defensive coordinator, loves to zone blitz. John Fox and Adam Gase, their head coach and offensive coordinator, know Brock Osweiler as well as any two coaches walking the earth. So they will have a game plan. They will help Fangio cobble together a game plan to try and contain Brock Osweiler and force him into the positions that he's least comfortable, at least from when they were coaching him from 2012 to 2014 and what they know of him. So, you know, if Osweiler struggles, let's not put too much, you know, don't think it's the end of the world. If Osweiler does well, you know, don't go having a ticker tape parade for him. That's all I'm saying.
How key is it for the Broncos to actually get their run game going early? Because those early deficits seem to be really forcing their hand in what they're able to do. And once that happens, it's just been kind of levied onto the defense to help them get back into a game.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is the defense, and defense is the best in the game right now. Best on per play basis, best on a per game basis. But hasn't been able to force turnovers recently. It's gotten pressure. I talked with Brandon Marshall about this today in the locker room. They're still getting the same amount of pressure on opposing quarterbacks they've gotten all year. It's just they haven't had the takeaways yet. And they come in clumps, and they're going to get there. But here's something for the defense that I would like to see. I would like to see the offense be more efficient at the start, avoid giveaways, and build a lead. Mm-hmm. This team was constructed for the defense to play from ahead and attack against an opponent that had to throw more often than run, that had to be in comeback mode. And that's when you can crank up the pressure. That's when you can get the takeaways that can turn a competitive game into a rout. And the Broncos really haven't had the opportunity to do that. You know, maybe a little bit of an opportunity against the Raiders with a modest lead. Against the Vikings, they had a lead, and then the Vikings came back. And then Detroit a bit, and then Green Bay. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of games, they've been fighting from behind late. Or in the case of Baltimore, trying to run the clock down and preserve a lead in the fourth quarter. So if the offense could find a way to get some consistent drives going and build a lead and then not give it away, and I use that term because giveaways have killed the offense this year.
Yeah.
17 interceptions off Peyton Manning's arm, and then Brock Osweiler threw one last Sunday, but I mean, it was fourth down. It was, you know, you're going to Demaryius Thomas. You know, an okay decision, just a bad throw in the double coverage, but not the end of the world. But if the offense can avoid those giveaways that get the opponent back into the game, then you finally have the equation that you're looking for here, and maybe and then the Broncos can do a lot going forward. You know, again, from talking to Marshall in the locker room on Thursday, it's two-thirds of a great team. Defense is playing great. Special teams is among the best in the league. Mm-hmm. Got to get the offense to average. And can that happen with Brock Osweiler? We'll see. He certainly does some different things that may make it interesting.
This weekend's game is obviously one that's drawn a lot of attention ever since it was put on the schedule. Playing your old coach, playing a lot of your old coaches, John Fox, Adam Gase, Jeff Rogers, Jay Rogers, Darius Swinton, the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. They say that, Sylvester Williams said it'd be like playing your brother in Madden. You want to win, yeah. You want to have those bragging rights. I mean, it's not going to have, like, they're more worried about the outcome more than playing, you know, who they're playing. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the last time John Fox played his former team, which was when the Broncos played the Panthers back in 2012, they were pretty lights out.
They were, and it was interesting. I asked Von Miller and Chris Harris Jr. about it today, and they said, you know, Fox didn't make a big deal, but they all knew what it meant.
Right.
And I'm sure the same thing's going on in Lake Forest, Illinois this weekend. I'm sure that John Fox isn't going to his team and saying, hey, you know, these guys let us go. I can't do a good John Fox impression. I'm sorry.
That was really bad.
Yeah. I know. I'm not trying to do a John Fox impression.
Okay.
That's the thing.
Okay.
If I was trying to do a John Fox impression, I'd kind of get a little bit more scratchiness in my voice and it's already there. But he's not going in there saying, hey, you know, these guys let me go, and I want to get back at him. He's not doing that.
I don't think that would motivate anyone to begin with. I think that would come off as petty. However, players, people in general, tend to kind of know what happens. Like,
yeah, they know. They understand. And I'm sure the Bears players like John Fox. There's a lot of guys in that locker room here in Denver that like John Fox.
Yeah.
He's player's coach. Gets along with guys. I'd say the other angle, Jay Cutler playing against the Broncos for the first time because he missed the 2011 game because he was injured. Mm-hmm. But, Jay, really, who's left from when Jay Cutler parted ways here for the Broncos when they traded him. Josh McDaniels is in New England.
Ryan Clady.
Ryan Clady and
Ryan Harris.
Ryan Harris, who left and came back. And I don't think Jay Cutler has anything against Ryan Clady and Ryan Harris. In fact, I think he likes them. and that's pretty, you know, the people who are responsible for Jay Cutler no longer being with the Broncos after the 2008 season are long gone.
Yeah.
So I don't think he looks at the Broncos, he'll look at the Broncos on Sunday and think, I'm going to get back at them.
Yeah.
I think he gets that motivation from going against the Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Fox has done fairly well this year. I know he's kind of like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of like a reformative kind of key figure. He's turned around a couple franchises, multiple franchises.
He's a Mr. Fix-It.
Yeah.
And the other thing he does, you know, obviously you can look back at Super Bowl 48 and getting blown out, and you could say the team wasn't prepared and all that. But John Fox is very good at taking a bad team and getting and wringing the absolute maximum out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Take the 2011 Broncos. They're coming off a 4-12 season. Not a great team by any stretch of the imagination. I think their point differential, I want to say, was minus 80. Obviously, we know all about the team Tim Tebow comebacks, but John Fox and his staff found a way in that zone read option and riding it for as long as possible. They found a way to win with what they had. John Fox is a very good coach at making sure his own team's deficiencies are minimized as much as possible. And he's doing that with the Bears as well. It's not surprising to me that the only thing separating the Bears from being over 500 right now is the fact that they had to put Jimmy Clausen in for a game and a half. Because Jay Cutler, when he starts and finishes the game, the Bears are 4-3. And they've played very good teams close at home. Lost to the Vikings by 3. Lost to the Packers by 8. Beat the Raiders. You know, Bay Raiders are 4-5. They've had their moments of being good. And they were playing a good game against the Cardinals before Jay Cutler went down. And then the Cardinals pulled away in the second half with Clausen out there. This is not a bad team. This is a team that's going to play at the Broncos level. So it'll be a fascinating game to watch. I do not expect a runaway. I think this one's going to go down to the last minutes.
Cutler's having one of the better seasons of his career too.
Very efficient.
Yeah.
He's avoiding mistakes. You know, he's
on pace for the fewest amount of interceptions mm-hmm. of his career for a season. So.
And you know, there was some flack by the Bears for retaining him at such a big cap number.
Mm-hmm.
But who are you going to go out there and find who was better?
Yeah.
Jay Cutler is one of the he's not a top 5 quarterback. He's top 12 quarterback.
I guess you'd say serviceable as a above serviceable. He's a talented player.
Yeah. You can if you put enough around him, you can win with him.
Mhm.
He got him to within one game of the Super Bowl in 2010. You know, they've had some very good offenses in recent years. You can win with him, and it's a balanced offense this year. Jeremy Langford mm-hmm. stepped in for Matt Forte. They didn't miss a beat, and now you're probably going to get Matt Forte back this weekend. Doesn't look like they're going to have Pernell McPhee on the defensive side. That hurts their pass rush.
Mm.
But it's a potent offense. Alshon Jeffery's been back in the lineup the last 4 games. He's gone over 100 yards 3 times.
He's good.
Yeah.
Martellus
Bennett's having a good season at tight end. Zach Miller is starting to emerge. You know, it's an offense that poses some difficult questions for a defense. It's going to be one of the tougher matchups the Broncos have had this year.
I think people assume coming into the season that the Bears would be horrendous.
Yes.
And, I mean, they've had some issues, they got unlucky with wide receiver having an injury.
Yeah, it looked bad when Kevin Smith, you know, was lost and Eddie Royal's been hurt and of course Alshon Jeffery went down. At times it's looked bad, but they've really made the most of what they have, and yeah, it's going to be a fascinating game, And, you know, for Brock Osweiler starting against a defense that will do a lot of zone blitz type stuff, it's going to be a challenging game. It's the key for the Broncos on offense is to focus on what they're doing. Don't worry about the looks that Vic Fangio and his defense are going to give you. Focus on your job, because Fangio is going to try to confuse you. He's done that for a long time with his defenses. Go back to when he was in Carolina in the 90s. That was when the zone blitz really got going. Still does. In fact, you look at some of the Bears' defensive elements in terms of zone blitzing, it's right out of the Panthers' playbook, so circa 1996. We got our Panthers reference in. There we go.
If this were a TV show, that would be like the little box in the corner. It's like one.
The Broncos podcast drinking game.
God, I hope there isn't one.
No. Yeah, Charlotte, North Carolina references and Panthers references.
Three.
Ding, ding, ding. which is why you should listen to this podcast at home. Don't drive and listen.
Yeah, don't do that. gosh, I can't remember where I was going to go with. Dang. Oh, I was going to say that. I think more than just Brock Osweiler, I think this is a huge game for the rest of the entire team.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, going into last week's game, I was looking at that as a huge game for a test of their resiliency. And frankly, another loss, it's kind of a failure.
Yeah, you've got to find a way to stop this tailspin. A three game losing streak with the New England Patriots coming to town next week. And also, if you look at Kansas City and look at the awful collection of teams they've got to play the rest of the season, I mean, Kansas City looks like they're about to jump back into the race if the Broncos can't reverse this recent tailspin. It's a huge game. I think if you're the Broncos, if you win Sunday, you get to 8-2, and you get that first win under Brock Osweiler's belt, I think you're going to feel a lot better about what you can do in December, because then, yeah, the Patriots game is going to be tough, but then after that, San Diego, Oakland, and then San Diego at the end of the year, and in between that, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. But you figure if Osweiler gets off to a good start, again, it's not everything. You're not going to judge him after one game. But if he gets off to a good start, they can do something with that. They can continue that going forward, and build from there, and then maybe get Peyton Manning back at some point too, depending on how he recovers. And if Peyton Manning is healthy, and can get back to the Peyton Manning we know, then Broncos could be in very good shape for a run.
Now, before we head to Chicago in a couple of days from as we record this, we were doing a little thing, or Phil was, on Broncos TV. He was meeting up with Michael Schofield, a Chicago native, or Chicago suburb native, if you want to do that. And he was talking a little bit about, you know, some Chicago specialties, food, etc. And he posed the question, Home Alone or National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation? Now this one, I pizza is fine. Like, I like both styles of pizza. That seems to be a big firestorm.
Mm-hmm.
This question, though, Home Alone, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Well, I think definitely National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
When's it for me, too?
But Home Alone has its moments. I mean, is there a better obscure reference to make than to Fuller, the kid who wets the bed? If there's anyone ever named Fuller, the thing I think of is his parents saying, or his mom saying, Fuller, go easy on the Pepsi. And he's drinking it, and he looks at Macaulay Culkin, and he just raises his eyebrows, Belushi style.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that.
Can't put me with Fuller, he wets the bed.
That's true. I'm
there's just a little bit of subversive humor in there that I can kind of dig. But the thing with
it's definitely the more family friendly one. But I'm
family friendly. But he has the worst parents in the world. They go on vacation and they leave their kid.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I'm not sure how you.
I mean, and granted, like you get his mother's trying to get back to him and all that. The other thing I will say in Home Alone.
Yeah, but how do you get to the airport without the kid? Like, I can understand, like, oh, we think he's in the van.
How do you? Well, obviously, it's 1990.
Right.
You don't have the security that you have right now. Like, you'd go, this thing would have been figured out when you're going through the security line. Oh my God, we forgot Kevin. So you couldn't make Home Alone today.
Well, how do you get out of the van and not know that your son's not there? How do you get out of the van? And like, I don't, was there like some kind of stroller he was in, because he's not stroller age.
No. I think they saw someone else's head or something like that. I don't know.
They clearly, I mean, we're just digging into the Home Alone conspiracy theory here.
The other thing about Home Alone, and that's funny because I prefer Christmas Vacation, but here we are on a Home Alone tangent. I always liked the scenes with John Candy and his polka band.
Yes. John Candy. Man, I miss that guy.
Polka, polka. Gus Polinski is his name. He's the polka,
Gus Polinski.
The polka king of the Midwest. They had something that was a very big hit in Sheboygan, I think.
That's right. What was that song?
I thought it was like polka, polka.
Yeah, it was like polka.
We're looking it up now, by the way.
Are you looking it up?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
John Candy. Yeah, Gus Polinski.
Yeah, that's a. I was originally kind of down when Phil first raised that question. I was kind of like, "Oh, come on!"
Founding member of the Kenosha Kickers. I knew. I thought, I'm like, because I knew they had a song that was big in Sheboygan, but that Kenosha came into play. Kenosha Kickers. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. When Kevin's mom's trying to figure out if he's a bad parent, he says that his dad, well, John Candy says, well, my dad left me at a funeral parlor once. Or that he left his son in a funeral parlor once, and the son turned out okay after six or seven weeks. He came around and began talking again.
Oh, my goodness. We might have an office rewatching of these two movies. Tuesdays, Movie Tuesdays.
But it is appropriate to bring up National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation for this reason. It's the Bears game this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout that movie, Clark Griswold is wearing a Chicago Bears hat, the 80s style script. It's the same. He wears that same hat, I believe, in European Vacation as well. At one point.
I don't remember. Yeah.
I think when they're in Italy, he's wearing the Bears script. It's, right. They made him for all teams. You know, Dan Reeves used to wear that hat for the Broncos. I think we all, if you're a child of the 80s, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, it was very. Mm-hmm. No, there were no stripes.
No stripes.
It just said. The stripes were the college hat that had like UNC.
Thinking it was like a big horizontal, like white.
Not on the NFL. Actually, it was like, it was a script hat. They did it for other sports because you saw it like in the NBA as well.
Right.
But anyway, this is my point. The script Bears hat, the navy blue hat with orange writing, that was worn by Clark Griswold in National Lampoon's European and Christmas Vacations. When the Bears came to Denver in 2011, I was walking around the stands before the game, and I noticed something. I noticed that a majority of Bears fans were wearing jerseys of 80s Bears. Jim McMahon, Mike Singletary, the late, great Walter Payton, Richard Dent, etc. And a lot of those Bears fans were wearing the Clark Griswold hat. I looked at him like, are you people, are really stuck in the 1980s? And okay, I can't blame them because arguably one of the greatest teams of all time was the 1985 Bears.
Exactly.
They haven't won a world title since. If any fan base is entitled to be stuck in the 1980s, it is that of the Chicago Bears.
Well, what jersey would you buy from them after that era? Well, I'm waiting.
Oh, my gosh.
Cedric Benson.
Eric Kramer. Rashawn Salaam. Jim Miller. Shane Matthews led them to the playoffs one year. The flukiest season I've seen in the 21st century was the Chicago Bears in 2001, going 13-3 on what seemed to be an endless series of special teams fakes. take pick sixes, fumble sixes, scoop and scores, everything that you can attribute to luck happened to that team on a positive side, and then it finally got them in the playoffs when they didn't have luck and they lost, and it was the final game in the history of the old Soldier Field before they built the new place inside of the Colonnades. But yeah. Brian Urlacher.
Oh, yeah. That's silly. I was going to say Devin Hester.
But I was going back through the 90s, and Devin Hester's a good choice, and I think Broncos fans don't want to remember Devin Hester.
Mm.
I know Todd Sauerbrunn doesn't want to remember Devin Hester either.
Yeah, we missed a couple big ones there.
Well, I was thinking 90s, yeah. Late 90s. And yeah, Urlacher would be the one. Hester would kind of be an under-the-radar choice, but a very good one. And, boy, he put the fear of God in you when he was returning, even if you weren't religious. He put the fear of God in you when he was returning the football. My goodness. And why, yeah, you don't kick to Devin Hester. You don't kick to Devin Hester. How could you kick to Devin Hester?
That's a question that will go on people's gravestones. Why did I kick to Devin Hester?
In some respects, it might have been the low point of the Mike Shanahan era. Hmm. Because that game in 2007 could have easily been won if they just had a little bit more prudence and Todd Sauerbrunn had not kicked to Devin Hester. At least after he'd already returned one for a touchdown, he should have just been like, okay, we're kicking this puppy out of bounds.
Oh, well.
And then that's it.
Another one, Lance Briggs. Could have done Lance Briggs.
Probably some love for Peanut Tillman as well, who's now in Carolina.
Yeah. Peanut's beloved. Who doesn't like Peanut?
Who doesn't like peanuts?
Oh, that's five. That's five, I think. That's Oh. There's also Julius Peppers, but I don't know if that's a. I don't know if he kind of.
Nah, he wasn't there well enough. No. If Peppers goes in the Hall of Fame, he'll be remembered more as a Panther.
Yeah.
I think so. You know, when we do this podcast next year for the Broncos, it's the week of Broncos Panthers, it's going to be rather interesting.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. We might get hate mail.
Yeah. Anyway, on to Chicago.
Deep dish
pizza, Italian beef sandwiches, Chicago-style hot dogs. Oh, by the way, the old style is, you know, people attribute that to Chicago, but old style is actually a lacrosse Wisconsin beer.
Hmm. Well, I'm excited for just that kind of style. Some heavy food, some heavy beer, and then some nice sleep, and then we get up early the next morning to go head out to Soldier Field.
Here, bear down, Chicago Bears.
We're going to have snow, too.
That's
Saturday,
very Chicago.
I think.
Very Chicagoan.
This is going to be perfect. I mean, I hope the game goes perfect for us.
need to turn this around, yeah. Two-game skid. And, hey, fans are nervous, and I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And that loss last Sunday, I mean, that was really the worst home loss the Broncos have had since 2011. You know?
Yeah.
It's an unfamiliar feeling to leave that stadium feeling that way. It's unfamiliar to see that stadium clearing out as early as it did. So,
well, when you're down 29-0,
yeah, it was stunning. But
that's what another week is for. That's what a new week is for.
Yes.
What's the saying?
Tomorrow,
the biggest game is the next game.
The biggest game is the next game. Tomorrow is a new day. Or as was said in the movie 1986 movie Short Circuit, tomorrow is the next day.
And with that optimism, we will leave you. Subscribe on iTunes if you so desire, and we will see you in a week's time.